This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Well, then give us a call right now at 1-800-462-7413. You'll find the line open at 1-800-462-7413. And of course, as always, along with your calls, some really interesting research.
Yes, alcohol and exercise. Is there a link between drinking and moderate or more than moderate physical exercise?
Okay.
Interesting data. And hormonal therapy for prostate cancer. Is it safe? Do you actually get benefit from it, and is it safe? Some shocking information from the Journal of the AMA.
Okay, and what's our recipe?
Jack's sweet and sour turkey bomb. It's a turkey bomb, and if you don't know what a turkey bomb is, stay tuned because you will learn.
And this one coming up from Jack Wagner in Carbondale, Illinois, in just about 25 minutes.
And the nice thing about this bomb is it's safe.
A good bomb. 800-462-7413, and Zorba, our first caller, with us from Norman, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, my husband and I have been married for a little over a year, and it's been a wonderful year.
Mm-hmm.
Just great. But there's only one problem, and that is my husband snores.
Oh.
So every night for the past year, I've been wearing earplugs,
mm-hmm.
and they're just those little foam ones you get at the drugstore. And this works well for both of us. I can get a good night's sleep. But my question is, could this pose some kind of long-term hazard for my hearing? Because I'm looking forward to many nights of earplugs, I hope.
Now, before you tried the earplugs, did you go mm-hmm. through the other remedies, like giving them a kick or yelling at them?
Turning them over, nothing really helped.
Wait a minute, they just got married. You know, they're still in the
Over a year.
Wait a second, you've been married for 70 years now. You can kick your wife when it's 70 years of marriage, but not, that's the hard part. Well, snoring is a problem. First of all, I want to commend you on the earplugs versus, honey, I'm going into the other room, you snore away. So I want to commend you on that. Earplugs do not cause any harm at all. You can wear earplugs 24/7. And in fact, earplugs clearly are beneficial. We know, of course, for people who work around loud machinery that earplugs are really very, very important. I don't think you actually get a hearing loss from sleeping next to a snorer, because my wife snores and my hearing is really quite good, and she's been snoring for 20 years. Part of the treatments are actually people tend to snore more on their back, although my wife can snore on her side, so I know it doesn't work. And so there are some treatments. You go to the net of putting a tennis ball in the pajamas or the T-shirt, so basically they get off their back and they're on their sides. Breathe strips, these little strips that open up the nose. Some people relate to that, those kind of treatments. But for the most part, they all fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. some people snore, some people don't. Surgeries do not work at all. They don't do anything. But you're not going to give yourself any harm in the earplugs. Now, what kind of plugs do you use? Do you use the wax kind or do you use the little foamy things?
The foamy things.
And you reuse them. You don't throw them away after one use, right?
No. Never use them until they start looking grimy.
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. Once they start looking grimy, that's the way to use them. I use them on airplanes all the time. As soon as I get on the plane, I put the earplugs in my ears, and I know I look goofy because usually the person next to me stares at me and their eyes widen up, and I know they're thinking either, hey, I'd like to have a set of earplugs so that my hearing would be saved, or B, what a dork. So I know it's one or the other. So, yeah, earplugs will save your marriage. Continue using them.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to a listener in Eureka, California. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I enjoy smoking salmon as a hobby, and I enjoy eating a lot of smoked salmon. But the other day, my girlfriend was asking me, hey, doesn't that cause cancer? So I looked on the internet, and I saw some different sites that looked, pretty official, that some of them even said that a pound of smoked meat is the equivalent of 150 cigarettes. So I don't want to think that's true, and I'm wondering, how bad is it? And then is there anything I can do to, like, make it less carcinogenic? Like, does it matter how hot it gets or the wood or how much I smoke it?
Good questions, by the way. Good questions. Let me tell you where the data, where all this data comes from. It actually comes from smoked meats. We're going to put salmon to the side. We're talking about smoked beef and pork. That's what we're looking at. And if we look at people who eat lots of smoked products, and those are the Scandinavians, and they eat large amounts, and what they've discovered is that they are potentially carcinogens. Now, no one has ever proven that they actually cause cancer. We just know that certain types of cancers are more associated with this, esophageal cancer being the big one. So let's go to salmon. In other words, that's beef, that's pork, that's a totally different thing.
There aren't any nitrates or nitrites in salmon.
Well, I'm not sure if there are any nitrates or nitrites in salmon, but it's a different thing. It's not. First of all, we've never proven that nitrosamines actually cause cancer. We just know there's a connection. But we know there's a connection because of what the people are eating. And I've learned over my work as a sort of broadcast journalist and others that when you're looking at observational studies, they don't mean much. They're just observational studies. They have some meaning. So let's look at the benefits of smoked salmon. It's got omega-3 fatty acids that we know are really good for your heart. We know that eating fish once or twice a day greatly reduces the risk. Greatly reduces the risk of heart attack and stroke. And more importantly, it tastes great.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you rather have, bologna or smoked salmon? I mean, it's easy. One makes you happy, and one reminds you of your childhood. My mother used to feed me bologna sandwiches all the time. So the bottom line is, I don't think there's any strong data that smoked salmon is bad for you. And I think you can continue smoking your salmon and eating the smoked salmon.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's what I would do. So how often do you eat your smoked salmon?
Well, boy, if I make it, I make about 8 pounds at a time. I got a little smoker. I could easily eat a pound a week.
Wow, it's good stuff.
I'm eating it. It's hard not to just eat it all.
So you buy, I've never actually smoked salmon. I've thought about it. You buy the salmon at the store and then you smoke it? What do you?
Well, if no one catches it for me, then I buy it at the store and cut it up and then throw it in a brine, which is water with some salt and some spices and sugar, and overnight, and then you got to let it dry for an hour or two, and you sprinkle some more spices and sugar on the top, and then you put it in a box with some with a hot plate and some wood chips, and you smoke it about 3 hours, not too much, over like maybe 120, 150 degrees, and then it takes another maybe 5 or 6 hours without smoke in the same heat, and then you've got salmon.
It sounds like an act of love.
Yeah, it must be really good salmon there in the Pacific Northwest, huh?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I'll bet. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We entertained. We don't entertain very often. We had one person over for dinner the other night. I went to get salmon. I don't buy salmon. I never buy salmon. I went to get salmon. I said, "What's your best salmon?" And he said, "This one, Alaska, whatever." I said, "Okay, I'll have four small to medium slices of that for having somebody over for dinner." I got the four, put them in a package, stamp, and look at it. $30.
You had wild salmon. You did not have farm-raised salmon. So when you got the bill, you looked and you said, "No wonder I don't eat salmon or shrimp." But I bet it was good. I bet it was delicious.
It was fine.
But
wasn't $30.15 fine?
Wait a second. I go to Seattle. My daughter Dee Dee is now in Seattle in a family practice residency program. She loves it. And the first thing when I go to Seattle to visit her, she goes, "Oh, wait a minute. I'll tell you what salmon is running, if they're running."
Yeah.
And it's the Copper River salmon. And she goes, "Well, this salmon is better than that salmon." And they can tell the difference in Seattle. And you know what? They're right.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. You mentioned some research, Zorba, on drinking and exercise. What is the connection, you ask, between drinking and exercise? And I'm saying, why are we doing this topic? If you drink a whole lot, you probably don't exercise.
Well, it's kind of interesting. It tends to be the opposite.
What?
Looking at the data, If you look at abstainers versus people who drink, people who drink exercise more than the abstainers. And if you look at even heavy drinkers, that's 46 drinks a month, okay? Heavy drinkers are called 46. That's like a drink and a half a day. In Wisconsin, we don't call that a heavy drinker at all.
We're certainly a regular.
Exercise on the average for 20 minutes more per week. And there tends to be a linear relationship. Moderate people who drink on a moderate basis, 1 to 2 drinks a day on the whole, exercise more than people who are teetotalers.
Do you have any idea why this is?
Absolutely. Drinking makes you want to exercise.
Yeah, right.
There's no doubt about it. You have your beer every night and you want to exercise. Well, there's a lot of thoughts. Well, some people think, well, people who drink want to burn off the exercise and want to burn off the calories. I don't think that's what it is. I think part of it may be people who are looking sort of for sensation. Sensation adventurous people tend to drink more than people who aren't. So you go out and you play a basketball game with your buddies or you do some other activities, and a lot of people go to a bar afterwards. And I'll give you the perfect example.
Yeah.
Perfect example. My favorite cousin lives in Piedmont, California. Fancy suburb. They live in a small house. It's a fancy suburb. Mm-hmm. And she did a half marathon. This is last year. And at the end of the half marathon, in beautiful weather, what do they get? They get 4 ounces of carrot juice and a thank you card. That's what they got.
It was
a raise money marathon.
Yeah.
Well, I told her, I said, in May, we have a half marathon here called the Crazy Legs Run in Wisconsin. A little less than a half marathon.
Yeah.
It's always in miserable weather. It's always raining. Last year it was raining. What do you get at the end of the Crazy Legs Run? You get a t-shirt because it's cold and a glass of beer. Okay, what do you want? A glass of carrot juice for 4 ounces or a glass of beer? It's very clear the difference is there. So what's the bottom line, Tom?
I think the bottom line is this is very sketchy research. and doesn't really prove a whole lot.
It's sketchy research. There you got it. And we'll just pull this up. And next.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi.
How can we help?
Yeah, my name is Roy, and I was just calling, actually, to see what would be the real effects of smoking cigars on an occasional basis and exercising maybe 5 days a week with a little scotch.
Yeah, do you exercise 5 days a week, and do you smoke cigars?
Yes, I do.
How occasionally is occasionally?
At the most, 3 cigars a week. Sometimes 2, depends on the time.
Uh-huh.
But in the winter time, probably one a week, maybe.
Yeah.
It's something like 10 days without smoking a cigar.
Oh. And you want to know if the exercise sort of compensates for the couple of cigars a week or so?
Right.
And the scotch. You notice he said scotch.
Oh, yeah, you threw that in.
You missed the scotch.
He snuck that in, yeah.
You missed the scotch. Yeah. It was kind of thrown at the end. He said, and a scotch.
Yeah.
Which is in there.
I know it's not as good as eating celery sticks, but I kind of want to make it seem so it's okay.
It sure tastes better. Let's handle all 3 separately. First of all, 1 to 2 alcoholic beverages a day is okay. For the people who are alcoholics, this advice is not for you.
Yeah.
And the American Heart Association, in their puritanical East Coast snob ways, does not want to talk about alcohol because they go, alcohol is bad. But in fact, alcohol is just fine. Is red wine better than scotch? The data is very iffy. We think it's alcohol. And we don't know if there's a direct alcohol effect or it's the relaxation effect or if people who have a drink a day are a little bit different. So the scotch is okay. Now, let's look at the exercise separately. Exercise is great. The more we get, the better off we are up to a certain extent. We think exercise is a panacea. It's not. It makes us feel better. It makes us look better. It makes us more vibrant. Mm-hmm. And it does help reduce heart attack and stroke. And so exercise is a good thing to do. We're too sedentary a society.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the cigars. 2 or 3 cigars a week probably is equivalent to smoking 2 to 3 cigarettes a day. Why? We tend to, there's a lot of tobacco products around the cigar. It lasts longer than a typical cigarette. You don't inhale, but the reality is you do inhale. And it's equivalent, really, to passive smoking. Now, what about a cigar a week? Well, the less tobacco we have, we know there's a linear relationship. Mm-hmm. The less tobacco we have, the better off we are. So my thought is this. No cigars are better than any cigars. Okay, that's in the best of all possible world. Well, I'm not Candide. I know this is not the best of all possible worlds. As a doctor, I have to say, quit is best. Okay, now what if you don't quit? Reduce the number. And I would say, you said, in the wintertime it's one a week, in the summertime it's 3 a week, go to one a week. That's it. Or if you're going to have a puff on your cigar, have a puff or two in the cigar. You know, take the cigar, stop puffing on it, cut off the end, and enjoy that cigar a little bit longer. Take one cigar and spread it out over 3 days. That will reduce it. Now, a lot of docs will write me every time I say this, and they say, wait a minute, you got to tell them to quit. Anything less than quitting, you know, isn't there. But the reality is 20% of the population uses tobacco on a regular basis. So I'm willing to compromise a little bit and say, just cut it down and that'll be better. But continue with your exercise, and the scotch is healthier for you than the stogie.
Well, thanks a lot.
Sure. We appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi there.
What's up?
Well, my question is, I'm 17 years old, I'm almost done with high school, and I'm 5 feet tall. So I'm getting frustrated by being dwarfed by most middle schoolers. I'm the shortest person in my family. Can I hang upside down or do some exercise or eat any food to gain a couple more inches?
You're asking the wrong person when you're talking with Zorba.
Wait a second.
Zorba's about 5 feet tall,
Wait a
too.
Second. I'm not 5 feet tall, and you are not 6 feet tall.
I am 6 feet tall.
Yeah, right. Last time we measured you, what? When was the last time you got measured?
About 2 months ago, and I'm 6 feet tall.
Oh, God. I can't believe it. Well, you slouch. That's the problem. You slouch. How tall are your parents?
My mom is about 5'4", and my dad is about 5'9".
Okay, so your dad is tall. Because the most common cause of shortness tends to be parents. In other words, it's lineage of your parents. If your parents are short, you tend to be short. If your parents are tall, you tend to be tall. It changes in society once you introduce milk and protein. I went to Bali a number of years ago. I was there 30 years ago, and I went a number of years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago. And you can see all the kids are so much taller than their parents, and that's because they have more protein and more food, frankly. So that's the other factor. Okay, now the next step that we have to look at is we stop accelerating with our weight when secondary sex characteristics start to sort of reach their final spot. So there isn't really anything you can do, usually, and that's not 100%, to continue growing. The way to answer the question is to have, one of the ways to answer the questions is to have your growth plates looked at. And that is where you get an x-ray and you see if the growth plates and the bones are open. If the growth plates are, quote, open, and there's a way to evaluate this by radiology, then you haven't finished growing, and sometimes growth hormone can add a couple of inches. If the growth plates are closed, chances are very likely at the age of 17, started menstruating that the growth plates are closed, then there's nothing that you can do to actually add height to you other than wearing 3-inch heels.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that.
Well, she's a girl. Do you wear high heels?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, how high are they?
Probably about 3 or 4 inches.
See, they're 3 or 4 inch heels. Tom is sitting here. He's a 6-footer. He doesn't think about it. He's a 6-footer who slouches.
What I'm thinking about is how are her feet going to be in 30 years if she's wearing 4-inch heels all the time?
You know,
they're terrible for women's feet.
She's 17. She doesn't have to think about when she's 35 or 40. She's 17. She's got to look sexy and walk around in those 3-inch heels as long as you can do it. How can you stand up in those things? Do you have trouble kind of balancing? I've never figured that out.
It is not easy.
Yeah,
I used to be a gymnast, so maybe that helps.
I was thinking gymnast. I was thinking the gymnasts tend to be your height, which is fine, right?
Right. Yeah. So did you give up being a gymnast?
Yes, I did.
How come?
Well, just the pounding of practice hurt my joints, and it just wasn't working out, you know?
So being a gymnast was harder than wearing high heels, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, the bottom line is there is no exercise, and what you do is then you adjust to your body. And that really is the other thing. It's adjusting to the body and body image. The real issue is society. We have all these models. Yeah. They're 6 foot tall. They're anorexic. They're as thin as they possibly can. And all of a sudden, the stuff that's in Harper's Bazaar and Vogue magazine becomes the normal for society. The reality is that is not the normal for all people in society, and that's really the bottom line issue. So no exercise that I know of. You can wear your high heels, even though Uncle Tom says you can't.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, Uncle Tom says you're looking great. Don't worry about your height. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. We have our recipe coming up. Lots more of your calls with some more interesting research, our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons for you to stay with us right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have callers waiting, but a line open for you now at 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, it's recipe time, and for that, we are very pleased to welcome from Carbondale, Illinois, a Zorba Pastor on Your Health listener, Jack Wagner. Jack, hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Hi,
thanks. Zorba. Thanks a lot for submitting the recipe for Jack's Sweet and Sour Turkey Bomb.
Yeah, where did you get this name? I mean, I can understand the name Jack. Your mom gave you that. Sweet and sour, I know that turkey. But bomb, I've never eaten a bomb.
Well, gut bomb.
Gut bomb.
But now that's gut unusual bomb. For us to have a heart-healthy recipe for a
heart-healthy gut bomb. You know, gut bomb. That brings me back to the day when I thought of gut bomb. How long have you been making this?
It kind of evolved over years, this whole recipe thing just came about last fall or something. I put it together. I was in the store, and I was usually make two burger patties and two buns, and I was just using one, you know, slice of cheese, and I started doing was putting different cheese on each one,
mm-hmm.
and then I started putting different relishes and things on them, and then it just evolved into this one, and I thought of it when I was going through the bread aisle, and I saw the rye bread there. I thought, well, I'll try that, and I'll make the one big patty to fit the whole bread.
Well, when you say big patty, what are we talking about here?
Well, it's between a half and three-quarter pound.
A half and three-quarter pound, and we call it public radio, and a heart-healthy recipe. That's really. But, you know, I think this recipe is a good example. How do you take, we'll say, a bomb of a food, and try to make it a little bit healthier? So we're going to go through it exactly with that as a thought. Okay, so we start out with a large ground turkey patty. So, as you said, this is half a pound, a three-quarter pound. I want to talk a little bit about this. So it's a ground turkey patty. Where do you get it? Is it white meat or dark meat, or do you pay attention?
I don't pay attention. It's the local grocery store here, Arnold's Market, has it. They don't have it all. They don't have ground turkey all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like a real treat when I can get in there and get a package of it and bring it home.
And there is a difference. Dark meat has more fat in it.
Right.
White meat has less fat in it. Often it's a mixture between one and the other. If people are going out and actually going to make the recipe, they want to look at the turkey patty itself or talk to the butcher and say, is this white or dark meat? You can immediately make it better with white meat, but it'll be drier. On the other hand, we're going to make it moist in the middle of that. Have you ever done it with veggie patties?
Yes, I have.
How's it taste with veggie patties?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
You get the different flavors and stuff.
Yeah, I think veggie patties are pretty good. That's about what I say. They never satisfy me because they're veggie patties. Sometimes, you know, they're kind of make-believe cardboard food. I know the people who eat veggie patties will now write in and say, wait a minute, the way I make my veggie patty, it's okay. But I know. So look at what you're using. Turkey is better meat to use. Okay. One slice of Colby Jack cheese. Use low-fat cheese or regular cheese?
Regular cheese.
Again, it's only a slice. A slice is 80 to 100 calories. If you want to have less fat, you make a low-fat cheese. I have used low-fat cheeses. On the whole, if you melt them, They tend to taste fairly good. Tom is now laughing.
Well, I'm just saying we have a slice, one slice of Colby Jack cheese. We're coming up with another slice of pepper jack cheese.
Right. Yeah, two slices.
And you've got
of cheese.
3/4 of a pound of meat.
Yeah.
You can't even taste the cheese on the 3/4.
Well, wait a second. Do you like cheeseburgers, Tom?
Sure.
Well, there's not a lot of cheese.
I don't
on
have
burger,
a 3/4 pound cheeseburger.
Let's go on. A slice of Colby Jack cheese and a slice of pepper cheese.
Right. This store also has Veggie Jack.
Veggie Jack.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's really good.
It's kind of spicy, too.
You know what I had the other day? I was going through the middle of Wisconsin on my way to Lake Geneva, and I stopped at a little butcher store. When I see butcher stores in the middle of the country, they usually are meat processors. I always stop. The food is always interesting and usually exceptional. I had jalapeno jack cheese. It was the hottest cheese I ever had.
Ooh, yeah.
And I said, why do you have this? And he said, we have a lot of Hispanics now who live in our area, and they love jalapeno jack. Mm-hmm. It was hot. It was really good. Okay, so two slices of two different cheeses. In this case, Colby Jack and Pepper Jack.
Yeah.
Jalapeno Jack, if you can get it. Two slices of rye bread.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Good rye bread? What kind of rye bread?
Yeah, good rye bread. And I've used pumpernickel, and now they've got this swirl that's pumpernickel
swirl
and rye.
Is great. I love swirl. Yeah. I love swirl.
That's really good.
My mom loves swirl. Every time I see swirl bread, I think of my mom, so I love it.
Yeah, that's what I got right now. And,
yeah.
But if I can get the ground turkey this week, that's what I'll have it on.
Okay. A tablespoonful of sweet pickle relish.
Right.
A big tea sweet relish.
One slice of sweet onion, either grilled or raw.
I'll take raw, one slice.
Ah, immediately. You know, every time we say onion, you say raw. Did you know that?
I don't like cooked onions.
Oh, you don't like?
I
and
love
you love
raw
onions.
Onion.
Right. You ever have onion sandwiches?
I've never eaten an onion sandwich.
Oh, I used to have onion sandwiches with schmaltz.
It'd be good, though. Yeah.
With schmaltz. Yeah. You know what that was? That was chicken fat and onion sandwiches. I used to get that for lunch sometimes.
Oh. Hmm. I don't know about the chicken fat.
Okay. A slice of sweet onion, 2 tablespoonfuls of sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Two big teas sauerkraut.
You like sauerkraut, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I like it. You ever have,
in moderation.
In moderation.
Yeah.
You ever have kraut juice?
No.
Yeah. Well, we have kraut juice up here, let me tell you. And I've had that. And you know what? I'll take sauerkraut to kraut juice any day.
Maybe that's why I haven't had it.
Ah, there you go. And a slice of red onion. Again, grilled or raw, depending on what you like.
Boy, another slice of onion. Okay.
Yeah. See, Tom likes this recipe. His mouth is now watering, I can see. And he's breathing quickly.
Well, the quantity. I'm not so enthused by the
quantity. Hey, you can break it in half. You don't have to have the whole thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to have
the
yellow mustard and spicy brown mustard.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is that it? Okay, so let's make this Wonderful Jack sweet and sour turkey bomb. Grill or broil a rye-shaped patty. So you make the patty to fit the bun. Is that what you do, or the bread?
Yeah, right.
Until it's done. Melt the cheese on top of each lobe at the end. So you've got one cheese on one side, one on the other. I kind of like that as a concept. You know, I've never thought about that as a concept. Two different cheeses on one patty.
And two different slices of onion.
Yeah, well, two different slices of onion. I like it as a concept.
If you make a double cheeseburger, you put, one patty on top of another one with the cheese on top of each one.
I have to tell you, I've eaten double cheeseburgers, but I've never made one at home. I just haven't done it. Okay, toast the rye bread. Place the patty on the slice of rye bread. Add the relish, sweet onion to the Colby Jack side, and the sauerkraut and red onion to the pepper jack side. I love it. Cover it with a second slice of rye, cut lengthwise, and enjoy. I love this. Calories are 294 calories. When we put this in the processor, the computer processor, that is, I tend to think that Adam might have cut down a little bit on exactly what we were using, because we only have 294 calories. It's probably going to be more like about a 400 or 500 calorie dish. 25% to 30% of the fat you need for the day. So why not get it at a place you enjoy it? I love it. I think it's good.
But Jack, honestly, you can't get your mouth around this sandwich if you have 3/4 of a pound of meat and all that other stuff in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you see?
Well, and the thing is, when you're eating it, you take a bite off one end, and then you take a bite off the other end.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
And you work your way to the middle.
I think it's great. You know what? We're going to rename it Jack's Sweet and Sour Turkey Bomb Delight. Turkey Bomb Delight Celebration Sandwich. Thank you so much for this. I think a lot of our listeners are going to definitely go to the website. And
I've never seen this heart-healthy doc so excited about
Well,
that's because we talk about vegetables all the time.
I'm sick of vegetables.
That's right. I really like those. Hey, it's me, Ben!
Well, the thing is, too, is you can share it with a friend. You cut it lengthwise.
Oh, yeah.
So you only get half of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much for sending us the recipe. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Jack gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it is easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Zorba, here's a listener with us now in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Well, following an MRI, I was recently diagnosed with degenerative disc disease, all in my lower back. And there seems to be a lot of different therapies and approaches to this. I'm very active, and it started to kind of compromise some of my activity, but kind of wanted to see it or get an overview from you on kind of the common therapies and best practices for treating degenerative disc disease.
Best practices. So what sort of business are you in?
I am a sales rep.
A sales rep. Okay. So just the word best practices, I was trying to figure out.
Well, you thought you had a doctor on the phone?
Well, doctors, but also people are in sales do that. They have best practices within there. I just wanted to know. I'm always curious about that. Well, first of all, it's common. You know, back degeneration of the back and the lower spine is as common as dirt. It's really common as you get older. It runs in families. It's more common in people who engage in manual labor, who are lifting heavy things, but happens after injuries, football injuries, and other things. And basically, what we do is we simply treat the pain that's involved for the most part. I mean, surgery is only necessary in people who conservative therapy does not work. Conservative therapy means, number one, making sure your joints are limber. So, do you exercise?
Yes.
What do you do?
Oh, different things. I actually, for the last year, I've actually been taking Kung Fu. I'm thinking that that might be an issue with the kicking and some of the movement, so I've stopped that for now. I go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. I do, you know, half an hour of cardio on an elliptical machine.
Great.
And then I lift some weights as well.
Great. And that, by the way, is very good. Elliptical machines are wonderful. They're much better than pounding the pavement of jogging. You know, the jogging craze of the 70s were great, but it led to a lot of arthritis in the 90s and, you know, the new millennium, which is, you know, well upon us. So I think the elliptical is great. I think cardio is great. Believe it or not, smoking cessation. You don't smoke, right?
I do.
And you've been smoking for how many years?
Gosh, I'm going on 20 years now.
Yeah, going on 20 years. So we know that people who quit smoking have less back pain. It's very interesting. We don't know why. We don't know if there's an exercise issue or if there's a pain threshold issue, but we know that when people quit smoking, their back pain is less. So that's one of the things you want to do. What you want to do is say, hey, I don't want to just quit smoking. So what you want to do is visualize today. Do you picture yourself smoking for the rest of your life?
No, I don't.
So the only question is, when are you going to quit? If you don't visualize yourself for the rest of your life, when am I going to quit? I just got called on the carpet today, talked to the doc on the phone. He said I ought to quit smoking. You know, there are a lot of ways to quit. We've got good medicines that help people, nicotine replacement. But that's one of the things you want to do for your low back. You want to exercise regularly. You're right about the Kung Fu that may be bad for the back. Stretching exercises, key important. Aerobic exercise, key important. Weight, secondary important. Smoking, very important. And then avoiding injury. In your job, avoiding injury is not as much of an issue, but for other jobs it is. Mm-hmm. So good luck. That's what I would do. Anti-inflammatories for bad pain is important. I don't think there's any evidence that there's any supplement that will help retard your degenerative disc disease.
Is there any chance at all that you would like quit smoking right now?
No, I'd say there's little chance. I think I need to get a little bit more into it and see what opportunities are out there. Now, I've tried several times on my own, and it's been pretty ineffective.
Uh-huh. Well, when I smoked, how many times do you think it took me to quit?
10.
Oh, Five.
Took four times to actually, yeah. where I actually stopped. I'd stopped for a day or two. I only smoked for 3 years. I was in my 20s. So I fully, fully relate to the fact that I was highly addictive. And the reality is, even though you failed before, it doesn't mean you fail again. Most smokers take five to 10 times to quit.
Here's the deal. Quit right now. And 6 months from now, call our producer back at 800-462-7413 and say, I quit the day I talked with Zorba, and it's been 6 months since I quit, and we can get you back on the radio to talk about it.
That sounds good. I'll definitely follow up with you.
Okay, deal. Thanks a lot for
that call.
And before the break, Zorba, it's time to dust off your gavel and don your black robe, because we have another case for Judge Zorba. This case comes to us from Paul in Marinette, Wisconsin, and has to do with that popular brand of yogurt, Activia. Paul and his wife have been having a discussion about whether or not Activia is healthier than normal yogurt, as it claims. Paul believes that it's just marketing. Zorba, your ruling.
Well, first of all, it is marketing because it costs more and it's got another name.
But is it just
marketing? It's probiotic. There's a good question. I don't think the question has really been answered. We know that yogurt is good for us. Yogurt contains lactobacillus, but Activia and some of the other brands actually have other probiotics that work in digestive health. And whether or not that actually reduces the amount of gastroenteritis or bad problems that can happen with our gut has yet to be answered. I think that the data, the scientific data on this, is very weak. On the other hand, I'm not against it, and I think it's an excellent product, and it gets us to eat low-fat yogurt, which is excellent. So I think I'm going to tell you something. You know, sometimes it's 50-50.
Yeah.
I think this is 50-50, and I'm going to take off my hat, and I'm going to support both of them. Go out. One can have Activia, and one can have normal yogurt, and enjoy your life.
So Judge Zorba says there's a lack of evidence.
It's a tie. It's a tie.
Want to add your case to the Judge Zorba docket? Send your affidavit or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some really interesting research coming up, some more of your calls as well, and our medical myth buster. You're on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some interesting, kind of important research, I guess, on treating prostate cancer.
Well, prostate cancer is an important cancer. Roughly 25,000 deaths a year from prostate cancer. But most men die with prostate cancer, not of prostate cancer. You take 70-year-old guys who die for other reasons. You look at their prostate, 70-80% have prostate cancer, mm-hmm. but it never grew. Mm-hmm. So the Europeans generally don't do much about it. They watch it. It's called watchful waiting. If it starts to grow, then they treat it. Mm-hmm. In America, we have a totally other view. We say treat it, and that's kind of the difference between our two societies. But here's an issue. We look at specifically a treatment of prostate cancer whereby men have external beam radiation. They have radiation, but before they do that, they have hormonal therapy to shrink the prostate. And there's certain reasons that you do this. Mm-hmm. And generally, that's thought to be good because it shrinks the prostate, makes a fewer number of cells, and therefore the radiation therapy, either by an external beam or these little seeds, mm-hmm. radiation seeds that go in the prostate, will work. Well, then they looked at a large cohort, a large study, and they looked at men who had to have this external therapy and the hormonal therapy. They were a higher risk men. And they looked at those who had heart disease and those who didn't. Remember, these are mostly older guys in their 70s. Yeah. Lo and behold, here's what they found. If you had a history of coronary artery disease, now there's previous heart attack or something going on into your heart, or heart failure, generally, and then you had this hormonal therapy, the chances that you would die were actually twice as great in the treatment group with the therapy, the hormonal therapy, than in the group without the therapy.
The chances you would die of?
Heart attacks and strokes, the all-cause mortality. So here it is. When we look at prostate cancer, we know that for some guys, it's important to shrink the prostate before you give radiation. But it turns out that for others, shrinking that prostate with hormonal therapy has other side effects. Specifically, it makes the chances you're going to die of a heart attack much worse.
Yeah, but now if you don't have a heart condition or haven't had a heart attack, then
then it's okay. I think there's an important take-home message here that first of all, we tend to do several things when we're treating cancer. And often we look at, I want to get the cancer treated, and we don't look at the side effects. What are the side effects of it? We know that there's side effects of cancer treatment. So here it is. It's hormonal therapy. I have a number of patients who go through it. They have side effects. They get hot flashes. They have erectile dysfunction from it and other things. Well, the fact is, for those who have heart disease, you're going to make an increased risk of having a heart attack. I think it's very important for anyone with prostate cancer to sit down with their doctor and say, I want to know the benefits and the risks of this therapy, and then make an active decision. It's an individual decision for you.
1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener joins now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I have my daughter who's in her first pregnancy, and she usually dyes her hair, colors it. And we've gotten mixed messages from both doctors and research, and she doesn't know whether it's dangerous to the fetus or not. And so I'm calling you to find out what your thoughts are.
So what do her doctors say?
Well, her current gynecologist says it's not a problem.
Right. Well, first of all, what the government has done is the government has looked at these things and they do certain classifications. So classification A for a drug, for instance, means we have good studies that show it's safe for the fetus. There are not a lot of drugs that actually have that classification because there are not a lot of studies that are out where you actually give the drug to a pregnant person to see how it affects the baby. And then we have classification X at the other extreme, which means very bad for the fetus. Good example of that is Accutane, the drug that's given for acne that you swallow. We know it causes birth defects. Thalidomide would be another perfect example of X. And then we have the stuff in between. We have B, C, and D. On the whole, if we knew that hair dyeing was bad for you, that would be on the label of a lot of hair dyeing products. I mean, you know, the feds would put it on the label, and it would not be just common knowledge. There would be a big black box. If you're pregnant or think you're pregnant, don't use this hair dye. Just like it's on labels of some alcoholic beverages and it's on cigarette labels all over the place, we know those things are bad for you. There's no solid concrete evidence that dyeing your hair with a traditional over-the-counter type hair dye is bad for the fetus. There just is no concrete evidence. So I think it's safe. I go with the first gynecologist, and I think it's safe, and I think it's okay to do. Now, some people would say, well, you don't want to take a chance with your baby. I think if you feel better about yourself when you're pregnant and you feel good about yourself, you have a healthier baby.
I agree with you.
You know, so I would support that. I think it's fine.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
A pleasure.
Thank you so much for calling. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, we're at the point in the show now where it's time for our medical myth buster.
Yes, Tom.
Today's myth may catch a lot of people off guard. It deals with blowing your nose when you have a cold. This seems like a natural thing to do, but some say that it's an unhealthy thing to do. Is it a myth that you should avoid blowing your nose when you have a cold?
Now, what'd your mother say?
Well, she never told me not to. I mean, when else would you blow your nose? I mean, that's the time when you blow your nose if you have a cold. I never knew that was a myth.
Well, it turns out it may not be a myth.
Oh, really?
And here's the issue. First of all, sneezing, we know, is a very natural response. Sneezing gets the mucus out of your nose. It blows it out. But there's been some research that shows that when you blow your nose, especially if you really blow your nose hard, that you actually force mucus up into your sinuses and bacteria into your sinuses, and may you actually be causing chronic sinus problems. So some people say blowing your nose is actually bad for you unless you blow your nose is the right way?
What's the right way?
Well, that's it. Did your mother show you the right way?
I don't remember being
well,
taught.
Well, in health class, what did they discuss in health class when you were in high school? Did they discuss blowing your nose?
I never have had any information in school
now,
about
come
blowing
on. You
my
remember,
nose.
You remember what they discussed in health class. What did they discuss in health class?
I don't have any memory of any health
it
class.
It wasn't blowing thing. Your nose. It was sexually transmitted diseases. That's what they did in the Chicago Public Schools in health class. They should have talked about blowing your nose. It's one nostril at a time, and that is safe. And the reason is you can blow the mucus out and just do it in a very gentle way. Don't try to go, and try to get all that mucus out of your nose. That is really what may cause the bacteria to go back into the sinuses. It's a gentle blow to alleviate the mucus that is plugged up in your nose, and then you, in a very gentle way, you put either the handkerchief, which I find kind of disgusting, the piece of Kleenex away, and then the next important thing is to either wash your hands or use a soapless cleanser on your hands, because that's where you spread bacteria.
Why can't you do a very gentle two nostril at a time?
Because it'll push it up into your sinuses. I just taught you. It's one nostril at a time is safe. Two nostrils are not. How does that sound?
It doesn't sound reasonable to me.
Thank you very much for your myth buster.
But this is real. It isn't a myth. You shouldn't. You could.
It's a myth.
That
it's not. It's real. If you blow both noses really hard, you'll blow the bacteria into your sinuses. And there's evidence. There's some evidence, minor, that may be bad. Blowing one nose at a time and getting the mucus out is okay.
I knew my education was lacking, and in that regard,
that's right. You were asleep during that class. That's what they.
If you'd like Zorba to blow a myth wide open, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, toll free. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Greenwood, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I am a piano instructor, and for many years I've cautioned my students against cracking their knuckles. And I warn them because it seems to me such an unnatural thing to do to a joint, and also because I've heard that knuckle or joint cracking brings on chronic problems later in life, such as arthritis. And my question for you is there any validity to my warnings, or am I giving you a premature chance at a mythbuster?
Well, now, I know what Zorba's going to say because we've talked about this before on the show. Where did you hear that cracking knuckles was harmful?
Probably my mother told my brother many years ago, and that's where I heard it.
And when you tell your piano students to stop doing it, they, of course, stop doing it, right?
While I'm listening, yes.
While I'm listening. It's interesting. Kids love to crack their knuckles. They just do it. You don't hear adults cracking their knuckles. You don't sit in a room at a conference. I never have, where everyone starts cracking. Oh, you see? Tom is cracking his knuckles. You see, Tom is cracking his knuckles. You don't see adults sitting around cracking their knuckles.
You don't do that too often. Yeah.
And my mother said the same thing, and my grandmother said the same thing, and my grandfather, and I'm sure they all said it. You know, it'll lead to, big arthritic joints. And the answer is no, it's a myth. Doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything at all. And let me explain what it actually is. We have gases within our joint fluid, and the gases are dissolved within the joint fluid. And they're in the joint. They're in the joints all over the body. Well, in the joints around the, in the knuckles, which are in the metacarpal phalangeal joints, what happens is when we pull on the joint itself, we increase the pressure inside the joint. We're increasing the pressure inside the joint. When we increase the pressure, the gas that's dissolved comes to the surface and opens up. And that's the popping sound. That's the pop of a gas bubble within the joint that is actually now dispersing. Doesn't go anywhere. It goes back into solution, but it's actually the pop of a bubble in the joint. And that's why you can only pop it once. You have to wait for a while before it actually gets into solution again, and you can do it again. So all you're doing is increasing the pressure in the joint, and it's doing absolutely no harm at all. You're not actually pulling it out of joint. You're not actually disturbing the architecture of the joint. It's not leading to arthritis. It is a total myth.
What about people who crack the larger joints? I had a student who used to put her arms up in the air and crack her shoulders.
It's the same thing. It makes no difference at all. It's gas. I crack my left knee. My right knee doesn't crack. My left knee cracks. I have no idea. And once I crack my left knee, I always feel good. And I've been doing it since I was young. And my mother would hate it. I'd sit at the table, crack my left knee, and she would tell me to get up and leave the kitchen. You know, so I did it more, you know, as a teenager. That's what I did.
Do some people have more of this gases in their joint fluid?
Well, I guess so. Some people do it more than others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people do a lot of things. You know, the Three Stooges would crack their knuckles all the time, and they made a good living out of it.
So now you know this is not bad. Are you going to quit telling your students to stop?
Yeah, what are you going to do with your students? Are you going to tell them the truth? Or
I'll just have to ignore it.
Yes, you'll just have to ignore it. Well, good luck on ignoring cracked knuckles. But they're not doing themselves harm.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. Zorba, before we head out for the week, let's see if we can help out a listener named Megan and her husband. Megan writes, I heard you once recommended Croc shoes. My husband is 24 years old and has a sedentary job. A few times a year, sometimes after activity, he throws out his back and is out for at least a couple of days. I would like to try Crocs to see if this would help along with exercise, but my husband is obsessed with flip-flops. Do you know about the Croc flip-flops? Are they as beneficial as the classic Crocs? And
well,
let me add, I don't remember you talking about Crocs being good for you.
I talked about Croc shoes and how they work for plantar fasciitis.
Oh,
that's what
okay.
I talked about
because
they are a cushion.
Yeah.
And they're useful. They're easy to put on when you get out there. Better than the traditional house slipper that usually has no cushion at all in it at all. So I talked about Crocs for that. But I didn't talk about Crocs for back pain. Back pain is interesting. We don't know what causes a lot of back pain. We know that exercise, gentle exercise, stretching exercises work. We know that that people who have stable shoes often walk better with back pain. You know, if he's stable on his flip-flops, usually in your 20s, you're pretty stable. If you wear flip-flops in your 50s or 60s, you're not quite as stable on the shoes. So I don't know if going to the Croc shoes or Croc flip-flops will help him. But I do know that regular stretching exercise will make a difference. So maybe you ought to just stick to the exercise, and that would be the right prescription.
Well, Zorba's advice is never a crock, so send in your lifestyle questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
A pleasure to be here, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Han Solo and Chewbacca, otherwise known as Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, are the two clowns responsible for this hour. Zorba, I'll let you figure out which is which. Our executive producer is Adam Han Solo Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidman. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0807Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.